More is you and Magic's Indulgence podcast. A little indulgence wherever you are. With More Than, the insurer that does more.
It's Magic 105.4. It's Sunday evening and Enya is our guest tonight with her indulgence songs and her indulgence choices. Very nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
And I am excited about playing what is a very fabulous list of records, but we'll get onto those in just a moment. Your first choice is Every Breath You Take, so we'll get it on and we'll ask why afterwards, but Here's the police. Enya's choice on indulgence on Magic. Every Breath You Take there from The Police. Enya, welcome along.
Thank you.
Now, before we talk about your music, let's talk about The Police and Every Breath You Take. Because I think when we think of your music, it's interesting. It's unlike anyone else's music. So it'd be hard to sort of think, what are your influences when it comes to your own music? But Your song choice, I think, might surprise people.
Okay.
So I wouldn't have had you down as a Police girl.
Oh, absolutely. A big fan of Police. And this is going to be, you know, a song that will forever be a classic pop song. You know, people will listen to Every Breath You Take for many years to come. And I had the opportunity of performing on stage with Sting at the Oscars, which was wonderful because, usually the Oscars, they have one performance at a time. Mm. But the time I was there, they had all the artists together.
Wow.
So there was Sting sort of to the right. There was Randy Newman further back. And then it was Paul McCartney just behind me ready to sing. So it was incredible, you know, because I admire all of their music. And it was great to meet up with them. So
there you are with an Oscar nomination, 4 Grammy Awards, 70 million albums. Your track record is incredible. And yet I was thinking, you know, in all my sort of 20 odd years in this business, I've never met you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know nothing about you apart from you make sort of beautiful music unlike anyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's obviously something you've decided in order to have a very private life.
Mm-hmm.
How on earth do you manage to become so successful and keep everything so private?
It's really to do with, to go back to Watermark, it's the success is more focused on the music. It always has been, because with Orinoco Flow and then with the success of Watermark, the focus was so much on the music. And this is what I like, because I've loved music all my life. And it was an opportunity. It wasn't necessary for me to have to actually sell my music at this stage because of the success of the album. So I always think success and fame are two different things.
Yes.
So it meant for me that I was able to keep a relatively low profile for me and just focus on the music.
How did you get that first big break? Because if you're not willing to go out, and not willing, that's the wrong term, actually, but in lots of it's, if you're a pop act, there's obviously a set route you can do. Mm-hmm. There are lots of shows you can go on. They can get you on that sort of treadmill and get the publicity working for you. So an album like yours, and it was very different from anything else we had heard.
Absolutely.
How did you manage to get out there and get people to listen to it?
It's quite a unique story because I work with two other people. I always have. It's the producer, Nicky Ryan, and the lyricist, Roma Ryan. And we actually started off because the first music I wrote was all melodies. And it was Roma who sort of said, it's very visual. Let's go and, you know, look for a soundtrack. And that's what I worked on first, was with David Putnam on The Frog Prince, and then worked with the BBC on The Celts. So the uniqueness of the sort of the signing of the record for a solo album was that they came to me, Warner UK, and they asked for a solo album. And there were conditions. And this is, you know, again, unusual for an unknown artist to be able to sort of set conditions on signing. And one of them was that that they would not interfere with the music in any way, that I had the freedom to continue with the experimentation that I had, you know, sort of started with Nicky and Roma and on the soundtrack. And the other factor was that I took as long as I needed to put an album together.
You were lucky.
And they felt this is fine. But with the success of Watermark, what happened was they felt there was no necessity to tour them because I'd surpassed the sales that they hoped with the album. And they were quite nervous at the fact of the clause of I would take as long as I needed for the second album. So they said, we don't need you to tour. We want you to go in and work in the second album. So in that regard, there was no big focus on sort of having to tour.
Okay, well, let's play Orinoco Flow, because it became an enormous worldwide single for you, and really did put you on the map, didn't it?
It really did
put you on the map, and a beautiful piece of music. Okay, it's Magic 105.4, Sunday evening with Enya as our guest, playing some of her favourite songs, and obviously we played Orinoco Flow now, which became enormous for you. When you suddenly became extremely well-known and famous... And then suddenly had to start not being a pop star, but you know, was that strange for you? Because, or was that something you really enjoyed?
I really enjoyed it because the music was so different. On Watermark, I sing in Gaelic, my first language, and I sing in Latin, a very old language. And you're not really thinking about commercial sort of album, you know, when you're putting together an album like this. So to have so many people accept the music, it's really, really wonderful. And it makes you really sort of focus, you know, to me, focusing on the music is what's really important. And also... it's important to kind of give yourself the freedom to always be creative in the studio, that you're not trying to. When I went in for my second album, I didn't really want to reproduce an album that was 12 Orinoco Flows. I wanted to kind of move on. So there's always a feeling to me, a risk factor, because all the songs on each album are quite diverse in that regard. And I enjoy that. It gives you a great sense of freedom when you're writing music, that you can write whatever you want.
Because lots of acts sort of get onto the treadmill, and it's only after a few albums, perhaps after a bit of success, and perhaps they've got a bit more power with their record company, that they can turn around and sort of make the album they've always wanted to make and have and enjoy that experimentation. You've obviously been able to do it from the moment you signed your deal.
Yes,
and you've been with Warners ever since, which is quite a rarity in this day and age. Mm-hmm. You've been with them a long time now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have, because they have allowed me that freedom to continue to experiment in the studio. The time factor, it's only when we feel that we have an album that is ready that we'll get in touch with them and get... invite them to the studio, and it's completely finished.
Wow.
And then we talk about a release date. So it's, you know, it's really up to us that we feel, yes, we're ready for a release this year.
That's like a perfect way to work, because a lot of artists nowadays have left the big record company because they found it a different, obviously had a very different experience of their relationship, and have set up their own labels. I mean, I think of Mick Hucknall, Simply Red, because he was one of the first to do it. But because they want to have the freedom that you seem to have enjoyed from the first album.
I did. And that's, as you said, one of the reasons that I've stayed with Warner UK, because they... really have been sort of encouraging that regard, and, you know, just have accepted the way that I work.
Well, the next record we're going to play is Eleanor Rigby by The Beatles, which is, I mean, a beautiful record. And actually, recently they found out that Eleanor Rigby did exist, and she was a scullery maid at the local hospital.
I heard about that, yes.
And he had sent some records he had got sort of anonymously to someone who was trying to raise some money, I think, so that she could sell these records and try and make the money. But so we know who Eleanor Rigby is now. now, obviously, you love The Beatles. I was listening to your album, and on Time Flies, you know, there's a reference to them and going across Abbey Road. So the Beatles, obviously, you know, a band you love.
Yes, but this comes through with Nicky, because he's my musical influences would be quite different to Nicky. And he introduced me really to the Beatles. I mean, I knew of the Beatles. I had heard some of the songs, but he is such a big fan. And he just has every single album. And, he, you know, and I'm playing and I'm listening. Eleanor Rigby to me was... you know, the beautiful infusion of sort of the classical music that they did with very sort of popular music. And it was a big risk factor in those days, because they were the band of the time. And then to be, you know, so creative And do something like that. I really admire that. It's really wonderful.
And a sad story too. No one came to a funeral. I mean, it's very sad, isn't it, the story of Eleanor Rigby? But it's very true, the sort of classical music they put through it. And actually, they started to do more and more. They started moving away and away from the real pop that they'd done first thing. But they were an incredibly inventive band, weren't they? You must have listened to Through Nikki now much more.
Yes,
I
have heard some like songs that wouldn't have been as popular as the hits. And you do hear this factor of the sense of we've done that. And they went into the studio to just keep further exploring musical sort of arrangements, and they really pushed themselves musically.
Well, let's play Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles. It's one of Enya's song choices for Indulgence on Magic. Now we'll come back. If you have just joined us, this is Neil Fox on Indulgence at Magic with Enya as our guest tonight. And fascinating for most of us because we know nothing about you, apart from you live in Dublin. Every now and again, you come out with an album that sells another 10 million. It's incredible, isn't it? You have this image of you hiding away at your home and where you have your studios, and you make an album, and then you phone up the record company now and say, I'm ready. Come and have a listen. Knowing nothing about you... what kind of life do you lead?
It's a very normal life I have, because the way I work, we have our own studio, and it's very much where I concentrate on music. But as soon as I walk from the studio, that's it. I never take my work home with me. I like to be able to sort of get into the studio and just, there's no distractions, focus on the music. But then once I come away from that, that's where sort of my inspirations are for my songs, for my melodies. So I really cut myself off completely from the work aspect of it. And when I'm writing music, it's only 5 days a week. It's just the Monday to Friday. And
Never think of a song at the weekend?
If it's there, if the inspiration is there, if it's strong enough, it'll come to the studio with me. I never sort of write down ideas. I just feel that if the moment is there, whatever it might be, a landscape, a story I've heard, whatever it might be, it's going to stay with me and then sort of evolve, into the song that I'm going to write. But my lifestyle is very, very normal from the studio.
And what are you? Have you got like a major hobby outside of outside of your music life? What do you love to do? What do you spend your money on?
I actually like to travel.
Do you?
Yeah, and I live in a beautiful home. I live in a castle, overlooking the Irish Sea, overlooking Wicklow Mountains, and then this beautiful sort of wooded area that I look down. I'm on a hill, so even that is inspirational in itself. So it's basically traveling and entertaining and just normal lifestyle.
And where's the best place you've ever traveled to?
Oh, there are a few cities.
Or the most fascinating.
But I would travel to Australia very often. I have family there, and Sydney is a fantastic city, especially the end of January, beginning of February. They have the Sydney Festival on, and they have Shakespeare Under the Stars in the Botanical Gardens. I went to see Romeo and Juliet, and it's just late at night. You have this performance, and the opera house have gone to the, many's of opera there. And then they have free concerts from the orchestra in the park. And so it's because of the weather, everything's kind of, it's outdoor events, So it's
certainly
fantastic.
Nice, isn't it? Yeah, January, February, when it's horrible over here and cold and wet in Ireland, clearly it's nice to escape
from
the sun.
But it's a great festival.
Well, here's an interesting song choice, actually. River Deep, Mountain High. You got the Phil Spector. Okay, what was it about? I mean, there was an amazing producer, man, came up with this wall of sound, and no one had ever quite heard it before. What is it about that song?
It's, as you said, the wall of sound that he creates. And in a way, it's again to do with my work with Nikki, because he tries to create this wall of sound with my voice. I think people now recognize when they hear an Enya song, there is an element of sort of my voice that we have this technique of layering. And it's not possible to get the same effect if you sample the voice. That's the first thing I have to say. You have to sing it in real time to get the human sort of element, you know, okay. the live element is really important the way we work. And it's listening to a lot of Phil Spector, and, you know, you hear how he just layered so much of the music. And with the reverb, you know, it's fantastic. So in a way, you know, we feel that we take, you know, the inspiration from his work.
See, I find that fascinating that, you know, you'd think of Enya and Phil Spector songs, they're poles apart, aren't they, really? But yeah, I've taken influences from Phil Spector, but his production techniques. And yeah, and he was clearly a production genius.
Fantastic.
And it really was. Does it make it difficult to perform live then, if the way that your vocals have been laid down for, and obviously takes you a long time to create these sort of works of art, really, these masterpieces on CD, to go out and perform it live must be quite difficult.
It would be, because I have never toured, but what I get is an occasion now when I'm doing promotional work that I get to perform with musicians, and the orchestra side will be fine because we use a lot of sort of string section for rhythm, and you know, it's really great to hear like 30-piece orchestra playing the music. Mm. On the vocal side, it's getting nearer and nearer. At the beginning, the choirs were a bit more restricted on the sound they had, but now the choirs are kind of the sound they're going for. It's a little bit nearer to what the sound that that I achieve in the studio from layering my voice. So there are great singers I worked with. So it's a big possibility to do this. You know, it would be different rendering
sure.
of what is on the album. But what we'd love to do is to do one sort of recording, say in a church, you know, of sort of the hits, you know, of the songs, and just to see what it's like, how it lends itself to live performance. But again, this is something we talk about each year. You know, what are we going to do next year? We're never sure, because sometimes we end up, because of taking so long on an album, or we work on a soundtrack. So it's like, 20 years is a long time, and still not a long time, you know, because we only have 7 albums in 20 years. So it's something we always talk about, because Nikki always, prior to working with me, had been on the road with so many bands. His love is of live sort of performance, and he does that in the studio with me as well.
So is he trying to encourage you to sort of put together this the big
Ask
live
him.
Show?
And yeah. he's always just talking about, he's always saying to me about, I heard this choir, this French choir, they're perfect. They've done this rendering of On Your Shore, and he played it to me. And, you know, so he's on the lookout constantly, okay. the choir.
Well, let's play River Deep Mountain High. Such an amazing record. Such a powerful record, isn't it? It's an uplifting record. It's one of my all-time favourites too. It's Magic 105.4, back in just a moment with a little bit of punk from Enya.
Ooh, I can drop that into an ad break. Oh, I like
see,
that.
Thanks. Yeah, you see, okay.
I do like the fact you say you live in a castle. You've got like this woody thing. I'm looking at you, the album cover there. You live in Narnia, don't you?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's the entrance to your house is through the wardrobe.
It is Narnia. I mean, it does look like that, doesn't it? My goodness. Right, Magic 105.4. Just we're indulging, really, with Enya. And, God, it must be really nice for you to actually come and play these songs. Everyone finds it quite therapeutic, actually, playing their favourite songs and having a chat about why. There's like a bit of a window to their souls, really, I think, when you get to find out why people love certain records. The next one is, I would have put, if someone had said to me, right, Enya's going to come in and choose some Stranglers to play, I would have gone, OK, now we're just getting into the realms of fantasy here. This is ridiculous. Golden Brown by the Stranglers.
Oh,
what a great record.
I was a big Stranglers fan at the time, and then they bring this song out, and it was totally different. It's waltz time. And harpsichord, you know, even for them, as you just mentioned, very much a punk band.
Yeah.
And this was a very sort of different song for them. Melody, absolutely beautiful. The performance, it was just stunning. So I just loved the song. Mm. And it's one, again, it's going to be a classic song.
You know, a punk band, but a punk band that wrote that had great melodies in their head. And it's like it's funny how many records, whatever era they were made, it's the melody that tends to pull it through, isn't it? And sort
of that is what I'm drawn to. You know, whatever genre of music, you know, that you like, it's usually you're drawn to a strong melody, and it makes it a song that'll be everlasting. I find, you know, when it's there, it connects with you right away. you know, that melody. You know,
I presume that's what you write first. Is it? Is it the melody?
Yes, it is. Yes, and that takes me quite a while. Mm. That takes me. I'm the one who holds up all the albums because it's that one moment. It's very, very much, you know, very much sort of the solitude moment for me where I sit there and it's. And I'm not sure what I'm going to write because I kind of go to the studio and it's like a blank canvas for me. And it can be, as I said, a song in Latin, a song in Gaelic, or a song, you know, in a different language, or, and, you know, it's an instrumental, upbeat, you know. So I'm not really sure. But what I know is that the influences musically are there. And I'm just kind of each day just feeling I'm closer to the song. But sometimes it can take a week, 2 weeks, a month, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking, is the last song that I've written, you know, the last song I'll ever write? You know, I get quite anxious. So for this album, it's only 10, you know, new songs that I've written. I don't have a library of songs that I can sort of reach to, and I'm so envious of other bands and artists who say, I had 30 songs to choose from, and I'm going, wow.
What, you had 10 and here they are, is that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's play Golden Brown by The Stranglers. Very fascinating talking to you, because I think every artist works in such a different way, the process of making their music. But Golden Brown by The Stranglers on Magic with Enya.
From that into ABBA.
Ah, you see, it's great. It's Magic 105.4 and the indulgence tonight of Enya, which is turning out to be a fascinating chat because it's trying to get into, because we don't know much in a way about your private life, which is lovely. You managed to keep that very private. Finding the process in which you make your music, and you've admitted you're not the world's most prolific artist. It's fascinating trying to get into your head. It's interesting looking at the album cover as well. We have noticed there is a sort of a Narnia-esque quality to this. This obviously is And Winter Came. This is the brand new album, which is out now. But there's you in a beautiful white dress with this magnificent horse behind you. You know, you might want to explain in a white snowy wood. You know, we've just come through the wardrobe and the there are the Pevenses, children running around just to the left. I mean, are you a dreamer? Are you a fantasy? Do you like living in fantasy land? Is that how you're? Because your music is fantasy.
I'm a very romantic person, into mythology, into melodies, and it's. You know, some of the albums can lend itself to, you know, some of the titles would lend itself more to everyday, like things that you see, like The Memory of Trees or A Day Without Rain. And so it can be, you know, akin with nature as well. This is something that, you know, has featured strongly on albums. So with this album, I actually thought, firstly, I kind of gone to the studio with the idea of putting together a Christmas album because I love Christmas. I love traditional sort of Christmas carols. But it kind of, as usual, in the studio, things kind of changed. And I ended up only recording to an original Christmas carols, which is Silent Night and O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, which is a very old Advent carol. So I started writing original sort of Christmas carol kind of songs. But then I started the kind of theme of winter kind of began to evolve in the songs. And I felt it'd be okay, you know, because within sort of winter is a celebration of Christmas. And I thought it'd be okay to try to infuse the two themes together to see what would happen, you know, for the album. And it worked quite well.
Well, was this meant to be Christmas this year, or could it have been Christmases in the past? Because obviously, you know, because you don't work too quickly. Was this meant to come out a couple of years ago and it's just taking you a bit of extra time?
Possibly. It's just, you know, the end of the year, it's like, are we ready or not? No.
Your version of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel is so beautiful, though.
Did you know it?
Yeah,
there are people I've spoken to, and I'm quite surprised, who didn't know it.
Right.
And then others that, you know, that knew it that I didn't expect. Like in America, it's one that they would know, and I thought it'd be more, you know,
it definitely takes you off to a different place, though, doesn't it? I mean, if you're having a stress day, you put that on, and you are, you know, it's taking you off. I was going to say into sort of La La Land, but it does. It takes you off into a very nice place.
It's 15th century French piece.
Is it?
Yeah, Carl. Very, very old. And I remember it from boarding school. That's the Carl I would have been taught. But what I did was I didn't listen to it I wanted to kind of remember what struck me by this Carl and kind of then do a rendering that would suit me.
Okay.
To try and sort of give it a little bit of originality rather than to sort of copy, you know, something that I've heard in arrangements. So, it was interesting to work on.
Well, your next track is interesting as well because...
It's a test.
It's okay. Yeah, don't worry. We don't have to get out. Yeah, it's all going off. Will Sten just finished the interview.
Although it did go on for a little bit longer than
normal. I could hear the bell.
Yeah, and I think it's when the firemen come in, we'll know we've got to go. I think we'll be fine. From O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, which is, 15th century French carol, which is gorgeous. Another one which is, about a more sort of day-to-day subject matter, Trains and Winter Rains.
Mm-hmm.
Let's play that one next as a track on this new album. And tell us about that song.
Trains and Winter Rains is about a journey. And it's a song, it's a little bit darker for me to sing this kind of a song, but it's more to do with how in your life there's a time where... you have to take this journey and no going back, no going home. And it's dark because of the unknown, but it's quite exciting because you don't know what lies ahead. And I think it's necessary at some stage for everyone. I've done it, so I think it's necessary for everyone to kind of... I think wintertime is where you kind of are a bit reflective and makes you think about these changes. You know, is it right for me to, change something in my life or not?
Hmm. Trains and Winter Rains. Let's play that.
That's my morning commute, that is.
Yeah. It's Magic 105.4. Enya has been our guest over the last hour, talking about, some of her favourite songs. What a list there. Police, Beatles, Phil Spector, Stranglers. My goodness. And we're going to add ABBA to that list as well in just a moment, which is quite amazing. I just want to be interested just to go back slightly to the talk about whether you're going to perform live, because I think, when someone has sold 70 million albums, which is an unbelievable, it puts you up into the real, top micro percentage of artists of all time. People would probably love to come and see you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've obviously thought about it a lot because your partners want you to go out and do it live.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, what kind of show would it be? Because it's
a very much a musical event.
Hmm.
Would, like I said,
it would have to be in a special venue as well, wouldn't it? It'd have to be
in a beautiful building, like an old building, a church, or it would add to the atmosphere, sort of the music. But very much a musical event for me because, the orchestra, the scoring is already there, and the arrangement of the songs. And then the choir, to sing the various parts. And there would have to be musicians as well, because there's a lot of, instruments that are there, more sort of the modern type of sounding instruments. Mm. And I would be up front, So it would be quite exciting, to sort of see... I wouldn't be concerned at sort of that it would be a performance or dancing or anything like that. It would be more of a concert.
Okay. And how would you feel about sort of being this front woman having to stand up there centre stage?
I have to say...
Is that filled with horror or excitement?
First time for me in stage, 3.5 years of age. That's the photograph. So,
okay.
So I'm no stranger to it. I come from a very musical family and... And I enjoyed, the performance side of it.
Okay.
I've always enjoyed it.
So there's part of you that is a show.
It's because I suppose I'm very passionate about music, and this is where you want to perform. This is where you feel at home and comfortable. When you perform.
Okay. Well, I look forward to, I suppose it's to watch this space, isn't it, on
mm-hmm.
that one?
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that's imminent, do you think, or is it could be something within a few years?
We, at the moment, I'm talking about future sort of projects. It's one on the list, that is continually we talk about, because we get so many requests worldwide. We get offered beautiful venues. There's a lot of orchestras who want to sort of work with me, and it's there all the time. We just keep sort of saying, you know, it would entail sort of taking a few months off to rehearse.
Yes.
So I'm not sure if that's what we're going to do next year at this stage.
Well, we get to your final song choice. What a great way to go out, though. The Winner Takes It All from ABBA. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Mamma Mia?
Believe it or not, I haven't seen it as of yet. I'm really looking forward to it because it was just the end of the album got a little bit intense for me. So I thought, no, I'm going to see it, you know, when I have the time, you know, to really enjoy it. But the excerpts I've seen of it look absolutely fantastic.
Hysterical. Oh, what a great feel-good film. Really amazing.
Fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, and Pierce Brosnan just, because he can't sing. And that's the beauty of it. I mean, it is such a wonderful film. My goodness, I can't wait to see it again. The Winner Takes It All from ABBA. Well, you obviously love melody, so my goodness, here's a band that wrote some amazing melodies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And actually, whenever people try and cover their songs, you realise how difficult their songs are and how clever they are, because no one can do it properly.
They have a very unique sound, and they used to layer as well.
Yeah, they do. They cleverly layer things.
And they're a tiny bit out of sync with their layering, which has that ABBA sound. But on this particular song, her performance is magnificent. It's beautiful. It's so emotional. The band were coming to the end. You can hear it in her voice. And it's just a fantastic performance.
Perfect. Let's go into that. The Winner Takes It All. That's the last song choice from Enya tonight, in here for the last hour on Magic with her Indulgence. Great choice of songs, if I may say. Very surprising. I don't know what I expected you to have, but I certainly didn't expect, you know, Stranglers and Beatles. It was so lovely, though. Do you go to live music? Do you like going to go to gigs?
On the occasions, yeah. I actually saw Police in, you know, one of their earlier performances in Ireland in Leixlip. I think U2 were, I think U2 and Squeeze were there as well.
God, it's a great lineup.
They were just starting, you know, like the Police were the highlight, but I think you two were sort of supporting them at this stage. So it was quite a few years ago.
That is quite a few years, my goodness.
Yeah, and I saw Eric Clapton in a small little venue in Sligo. You know, it's really great to sort of get that small little intimate kind of, you know, performance.
Well, it's been fascinating chatting, really fascinating chatting, and so nice to have actually learnt a little bit about you now, having so many of your albums. And I mean, it's amazing that how many you have sold now, isn't it? Where are your biggest markets in the world?
It's worldwide for me. It's a worldwide release, and it would be America, Europe, and Germany, and, you know, Japan would be pretty big, yeah.
So obviously promoting this, no doubt, up until Christmas and then early next year. And then do you plan your year out? I mean, a lot of bands obviously do by going, right, well, I've got this single coming out then. We'll go touring then. That's obviously not how you plan your
musical life. Well, the promotional trip is going to take me right up to Christmas, because I will be going to Japan and then finishing off in America. So get the opportunity to sing some songs and to talk a little bit about the album.
Pleasure having you in. Continued success, and a bit premature, but have a lovely Christmas. You obviously love Christmas, so have a really nice one. You know?
Same to you.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Magic Indulgence with More Than, indulging you with its personal customer manager service. You can download this interview in full at magic.co.uk/podcasts.